All right, fans, great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball. What a pleasure to bring on Martin Vanderpyle. He's a new author. He wrote a book called The Santo Plan. He's a baseball super fan. He's a fan of the Chicago Cubs as well. He's got a new book out. It's called The Santo Plan. Talks about the Hall of Fame. Let me read a little bit of the back so you get an idea of what this book is all about. The Baseball Hall of Fame is in the midst of a crisis of incessant negativity, arbitrary exclusion, and unapologetic hypocrisy. The Santo Plan, a comprehensive three-step solution for a better Baseball Hall of Fame, offers a detailed diagnosis of and a thorough, logical, and easily applicable prescription for the myriad of issues surrounding the sport's highest individual honor. It's time for reform and for a better Cooperstown. Better for the players, better for the fans, better for the game. It's time for the Santo Plan. Martin Vanderpyle, I love the book. It is absolutely terrific. Tell me how you got interested in this aspect of the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Well, as you said, I am a Cubs fan, and I grew up and I got to see, you know, Ernie Banks go in on his first ballot and Billy Williams go in on his sixth and Fergie go in on his third. And the whole time everybody was asking, okay, well, when is it Santo's time? And the whole process just kind of seemed muddled in my mind. It never really made any sense. You know, what was the difference between Billy Williams' first time and his sixth time? What made him more, you know, Hall of Fame worthy? Why wasn't Santo good enough? And, you know, what was the criteria? And, you know, back before the internet, you could really look up things. All I could ever find was that it was completely subjective. It was whatever the voters wanted. And the more and more as the years went by and I learned more and more about the Hall of Fame, the more I realized that so much of it just made no sense, especially compared to the other major sports Hall of Fames. And so eventually I was, you know, just trying to think, how can you make this a better process without radically altering it? You know, nobody wants to throw everything away and start from scratch. And that was what led me to writing this book.
People take the Hall of Fame very seriously. You start talking Hall of Famers and things like that, people get very upset at others' opinions.
Oh, yeah. The quickest way to start a fight online is just to say the name Dale Murphy. You will have grenades thrown from both sides within a moment. Yes, he belongs. I can't believe he's not there. Are you kidding? Look at this. Look at this. Look. It is, and that's just one guy. You know, there are so many guys you could start fights with, but to me, I can't see his name or his picture without seeing nothing but comments, back and forth volleys of opinions. It's kind of, I mean, it's fun at one point, but at some point it kind of gets a little ridiculous.
Well, you know, you look at something like a Dale Murphy and you argue about it, but the other halls of fame, basketball, football, golf, you don't get that kind of animosity when you bring something up.
No, you really don't. And that's one of the things I mentioned on the back of the book, the negativity. You know, when you have a Hall of Fame conversation these days, 99% of the time, it's about somebody who's not in. It's about, you know, the people you think should be in, the people you think should never be in, as opposed to those guys who are already there, unless it's somebody you think shouldn't be there. And that's just not okay. You know, the Hall of Fame needs to be about those who are enshrined. And that's one of the things I try and suggest in this book are ways to make it more focused upon the actual inductees as opposed to, you know, this laundry list of people on the outside.
Well, they say baseball's a talking sport. One can argue, well, it's good for the game. At least people talk about it, even though it may be sort of an argument back and forth. And the talking about baseball is healthy for baseball.
Oh, no, it definitely is a good thing that people still have these discussions. There will always be discussions on, you know, where is the line drawn? Who's on this side? Who's on that side? And, you know, that's never going to stop. There's no way to end that. The problem comes when you have so many people that are so ostensibly worthy, and yet they're not in. And you can't really understand how so many of the greatest players of the game aren't in. You don't have that issue in other sports. You know, you can't go to you know, the average football fan and say, hey, quick, name 10 guys who aren't in your Hall of Fame. that really belong there or that really have a good, argument. And you're not going to find, quick answers. Maybe if you look it up, you can find some. But baseball fans can name, a lineup or two. I can practically name a lineup of guys on the ballot still, let alone, historically, that I think either should be there or deserve way more consideration than they've gotten.
There is an arbitrary exclusion going on in baseball and with the Hall of Fame. How do they justify an empty class, which we've seen? Ron Santo had to die to get in. I imagine when Pete Rose is gone, he'll get in at some point. Dick Allen, of course, just passed away last year. Bill Freehan just recently. Are they next in line for getting the award after they're gone?
Well, posthumous inductions are going to happen. It's inevitable. But when you have an empty class, especially with the Veterans Committee, if a Veterans Committee says nobody is good enough this year, but then somebody is good enough the next year, that's the dictionary definition of arbitrary exclusion, and that's what happened with Ron Santo. Nobody was good. He wasn't good enough the previous years. Nobody was good enough. It wasn't like it was, we're going to take the top couple of guys. It was, nope, nobody's good enough. And then he dies and he's good enough. And I think that's going to be the same thing that happens with Dick Allen. Possibly the very next Veterans Committee iteration is going to be like, oh, yeah, Dick Allen, he's good enough. Well, he just died. Why didn't you do that a few years ago? And Bill Freehan, I can totally see getting in within the next few years. And I know there's a laundry list of guys who are, I don't want to say, approaching their deathbeds, but, there's a lot of guys who I have a feeling are, if they eventually get in, it's going to be too late for them to enjoy and for their fans to enjoy, for their family to really enjoy.
The book is The Santo Plan, A Comprehensive Three-Step Solution for a Better Baseball Hall of Fame by Martin Vanderpyl. Amphetamines versus steroids. You have a chapter on that. Very interesting.
Yeah, I do. I'm one of those people who tries to look at things as pragmatically as possible and not just go with, myths and popular opinion. And the more you look into the difference between what amphetamines could do for a baseball player and what steroids can do for a baseball player, as well as, statistically, what has occurred with these two drugs, the amphetamines were significantly worse. And nobody wants to accept that because it's just easier to blame the guys who bulked up. Everybody thinks, oh, you just take steroids and you can hit more homers. And, that's just not the case. Amphetamines, you get the full results right away, whereas steroids, yeah, they are helping. And I'm not saying that they didn't help, guys hit home runs, but that there was so much more to it that people aren't talking about. Nobody talks about the rapid increase in knowledge of how to maximize these these steroids, how to get better steroids. People were taking steroids in baseball back in the 1890s. It's been documented, and amphetamines as well. But the Bonds and Sosa crowd, they had access to better PEDs than the guys before them did. And that's one thing people just don't like to look at. They just want to brush that to the side and say, oh, no. It was you guys ruined the game with your steroids. Whereas, the guys before them they didn't ruin the game, but they had the same advantages, just not the level that, Clemens and so forth had. One thing that I mentioned in the book that, it came up again recently because of Miguel Cabrera. Is everybody likes to talk about how, the steroid guys ruined the 500 home run club. But the fact is, before 1960, there were only three people in that club. And then the, so-called amphetamine era for the next 30 years, that club didn't double. It didn't triple. It didn't even quadruple. It almost quintupled. It was 566% of what it had been just 30 years before. And since then, it didn't even double until Miguel Cabrera last week. So it's one of those things where, you just look at the popular opinion, you just look at the unsubstantiated myths, the whole garbage about, 10 cups of coffee, and you're going to wind up missing the bigger picture. And then, of course, there's the other question, which we don't need to get into, of who did both, because they've both been around forever.
Boy, interesting. All right, there's a three-step process, and the book is terrific. The chapters are really sort of like a Bill James book where you could just pick it up and you feel like you're right there learning about the players. But you do come to a three-step process of what you think should happen to reform the Hall of Fame. Take us through the three-step process as best you can.
Well, as quickly as I can, the first step to me is separation of church and state. We need to put baseball on one side and the Hall of Fame on another and draw a nice line between them. They can still work hand in hand, and they should, but it's time to allow international players like Asada Hara-O into the Hall of Fame. And when they let Negro League players in, it was one of the best things they ever did. It helped educate the fans to an important era of baseball. And as the game has grown internationally, I think the Hall of Fame needs to as well. And the other thing that would do is that would just put an end to the Pete Rose nonsense. You can be kicked out of baseball without being kicked out of the Hall of Fame. He doesn't need to come back to baseball. He doesn't need to be a part of any team. But this way, his Hall of Fame worthiness is no longer ignored. I mean, come on. The guy had more hits than anyone.
I love the first step because it takes MLB away from the Hall of Fame and allows the Hall of Fame just to deal in Hall of Famers without the politics of MLB. So go ahead. Second step.
The second step is to stop publishing the vote totals. And this is one that I've had a lot of people just, go, what? They're so interesting, though. Well, they are interesting, but they're ridiculous. I mean, you look at a few years ago, you had a year where 14 people who were entrusted with picking Hall of Famers said no to Greg Maddux. And in the same year, one of them said yes to Armando Benitez. And we don't need to see that. We don't need to see the undeniably great players having someone say, nah, you're not good enough, and having the questionable, he barely made it on the ballot guys, getting a random vote from a friend of theirs in the press booth. We just don't need that. You don't get that in the other sports. Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, Jerry Rice, none of their Hall of Fame voters stood up and said, nah, I don't think Michael Jordan's a Hall of Famer. And if they did, we didn't see it, and that's a good thing. And at the same time, we didn't get to see any of them throwing away random votes on, guys that clearly don't belong. But, oh, hey, you know what? He was a good interview, so I'm going to give him a vote. Mm-hmm. And if you go and you look at the list of guys who have gotten one or two random votes over the years, it makes you shake your head and wonder how these people are in charge of the Hall of Fame. But if we don't see these votes, it's no longer an issue. They can still vote for their friends, but we're not going to see, somebody throw away a vote on Jock Jones, who, is a good player. He wasn't a Hall of Famer.
Got it.
And then the third,
I keep stepping
on your toes there. I'm sorry.
I love it.
I'm just kind of feverish about this.
No, that's okay. And the second one is, not publishing the results. I like that. So go ahead. What's the third step?
And the third step is to reestablish minimums. I know sometimes when people bring up minimums, they're like, oh, no, Hall of Fame doesn't need that. Well, the Hall of Fame has had those before. People don't really know that, they don't really know the history of the Hall of Fame. But in the past, there have been runoff votes so that at least one person was elected. And the last one of those happened in 1967. Well, baseball has doubled in size since then, and it has almost twice or three times as much history. So that's why my suggestion is that the baseball writers, the top two vote getters, no matter what, they get in. Starting now, not, retrospectively, we don't need to go back throughout history. But if you make the top two in a modern Hall of Fame class, you belong in the Hall of Fame. At the same time, I would also suggest that the Veterans Committee has to at least select one person. That's how you stop these empty classes. You stop this ridiculous exclusion. You stop saying, no one's good enough this year, but someone's good enough next year from the exact same pool. And you get the Hall of Fame to move forward. You at least have those three people, which is still less than every other Hall of Fame for those worrying that, you're going to have a big Hall of Fame. It's still less than all the other Hall of Fames if you have that minimum of three people. And you avoid things like what just happened this year. No new Hall of Famers, and that just massive glut of people sitting at the border got even bigger.
All right. I like the three-step process. The third step, of course, the two-person minimum, no matter what the vote is, the top two get in. And there's some other things that you've talked about. So those are the three steps. I like it. The Buck mm-hmm. O'Neill Award, which is very important. It was sort of done, I think, haphazardly to name it after him when they didn't get into the Hall of Fame mm-hmm. by the Negro League Committee. But the Buck O'Neill Award, you have a thought about that one, too.
I list the three steps on their own because that's kind of the main plan. I didn't want to make it too big. But then I had a few other suggestions, and one of them was to make the Buck O'Neill Award an annual event, make that an annual celebration of the game, and to release the winner's name right before you announce the baseball writers and winners. That way you can associate it, you can make a big deal about it. Because let's be honest, there have been five members or five people elected to the Buck O'Neill or given the Buck O'Neill Award. You can't ask the average fan to name those five and expect to get maybe one or two. And the only reason they would get one is because Buck O'Neill's name is in the award. You know, it's just not an award that baseball highlights. You know, your average fan doesn't know about it.
So I love it. Very, very good stuff. The book is full. No, the book is full of we can go on because you have a lot of suggestions for the Hall of Fame. Eliminating the 10-player maximum on a vote, well, you know, that's one that I like a lot. But tell me about getting the book, The Santo Plan, because it's a lot of fun to read it. Where does one get this book?
Well, right now it's available only on Amazon. I'm hoping to get it available on a few other platforms shortly. But you can get both the ebook and the physical book on Amazon.com. Just look up The Santo Plan. You can find the link from my website, martinvanderpile.com, or as you kindly plugged my Twitter, @Vanderpile. And, you know, that's where it is right now. I'm hoping, like I said, to have it available in other platforms soon. But for now, hey, everybody out there, just go buy it on Amazon, please.
Well, I like it. Or our independent bookstores up in Montclair, we have David at the Book Tree. He can get mm-hmm. it for you as well. Well, it's a pleasure having you on. How did you find me? Because you sent me an email asking me to take a look at this book. How did you find me?
Well, there's an interesting story behind that. My name is also Marty Lurie, and our names have crossed paths on plenty of Google searches in the past. I used to work in the wonderful world of professional wrestling, and I used a pseudonym there. I was the evil manager, C. Edward Vanderpile. And when I started to write this book, I was like, you know, I can't call myself Marty Lurie for this book because there's already a Marty Lurie in baseball. That was something that I was really big on in wrestling is, you know, I helped a lot of guys come up with their names or change their names. And if you were using a name that was already being used, that wasn't going to fly. So I was like, no, I got to stick to that. I got to pick a different name. So I crossed my two names and became Martin Vanderpile. And then when I finished the book, I was like, you know what? Let me take a shot in the dark and see if the baseball Marty Lurie would be willing to take a look at this. And you absolutely have been such an inspiration with your kindness. I was expecting maybe you go, yeah, I'll take a look at it. I was not expecting to get I read it in one night, Bill James comp that I got from you. It has meant the world to me. I hope you understand that I'm not kidding when I say that.
No, I appreciate it. And I enjoy the book and I enjoyed meeting you because you are part of the Google search of Marty Lurie. So Marty Lurie, thanks for being on the show with Marty Lurie. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. You guys have a good day.
All right. This is The Santo Plan, a comprehensive three-step solution for a better Baseball Hall of Fame. It's really a good read. It's a lot of fun. All right, more coming up. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.